Something like wanting more sex from a partner, not necessarily because you want the sex itself, but because you want to feel loved and appreciated by your partner. You want to feel sexy. And that's not a bad thing to want those things. But sometimes I think it's important to know, are you able to ask for those outside of sex? Are you able to get that outside of sex?
Welcome to the Multiamory Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
We believe in looking to the future of relationships, not maintaining the status quo of the past.
So whether you're monogamous, polyamorous, swinging, casually dating, or if you just do relationships differently, we see you and we're here for you.
On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're talking about internal and external validation. We're looking at what does it really mean to validate someone or yourself? And we're going to talk about how both of those are important to healthy relationships and a healthy life, as well as some ways that you can work toward finding a better balance between the two in your own life. So to start out, what is validation?
I mean, somebody's got to make the parking ticket joke, right?
Oh, to validate what? Your
oh, validate your parking?
Just validating your parking?
You know, in planning this episode, that never once came to mind.
And really?
It was a real missed opportunity.
I saw a sketch once where a bunch of people were in line to get their parking validated. And of course, they walk up and they're like, oh, can you validate me? And the person is like, oh, yeah, you're so kind and you're so giving and all that stuff.
That's adorable.
That's great. Yeah. So what I found when looking at the articles and research and things about internal and external validation, it became clear that everyone wasn't talking about the same thing, or at least not in the same way. And I didn't find anyone else who made this distinction specifically, but I started to identify that there were essentially three different types of validation that people were talking about in either their research or in, you know, blogs by psychologists or coaches or therapists, you know, who were trying to offer people advice on internal and external validation, that it's like each one would usually be talking about one, maybe two of these three areas. And that's kind of what they meant by it. So I thought it would be useful for this episode to split it up into three sections and to talk about each of those, both internal and external versions of them, and then kind of what an extreme of internal looks like or an extreme of external looks like within that context. And then throughout the episode, we'll kind of get this larger picture of the landscape of talking about validation.
The first of these three meanings is self-worth. So this essentially boils down to how external feedback, as well as our own internal self-talk, can affect our self-esteem, our confidence, and our general sense of worthiness as a person.
Right. And then the next one is related to that, but a little bit different, and that's about our self-image. So not just our overall worth as a person, but specifically what qualities we identify in ourselves. Am I a brave person? Am I a kind person? Stuff like that. Based on feedback that we get from others, as well as from our own self-generated thoughts and things that we've decided about ourselves. So those questions of, am I generous? Am I smart? Am I chill? Am I responsible? Am I attractive?
Am I chill?
I ask myself that all the time.
Emily, Jace asks me that question all the time. He's seeking both internal and external validation on whether or not he is chill.
Like, am I a chill guy? Am I a chill, cool guy? Yeah, exactly. And so it's that, those sorts of things. So it's more about the image of who you are as a person, not just your value.
And finally, the third thing here is self-compassion or self-understanding, which is the recognition of your own or another person's thoughts, feelings, sensations, and behaviors as understandable.
Yeah.
Understandable.
Like relatable? Or like worthy of compassion?
Yeah, essentially that I know that we try to avoid using the word crazy on this show, but it's that question of like, am I crazy for having these thoughts? Like, am I crazy for feeling this way or for doing what I did? It's that kind of question. So that kind of validation, and we'll talk about this more when we get into it more in depth. but validation of, yeah, your experience is a valid one. That the way you're feeling right now, that makes sense. And I can understand how a person would feel the way that you feel right now. So like validating those feelings as being understandable and acceptable, I guess.
It's interesting to me that all of these are about self, and I guess that does make sense, but not that you are actively validating another, but rather that yourself is validated in these three separate ways.
And also, all three of them can be influenced internally and externally.
Externally, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
With all of these, I mean, we do give these things to other people and we influence other people as their external validators in all three of these different ways, just for the purpose of keeping them uniform with each other. They're all focused on the experience of internal. Each of us as an individual of how our self-worth or our self-image or our self kind of acceptance or understanding are influenced by these external and internal types of validation.
That makes sense. Okay. So while all of these are interconnected, we tend to focus on different things when we're talking about them. So we're going to look at all three in turn. So let's start with self-worth.
Yeah. So self-worth also could be called self-confidence or self-esteem. There's a professor named Elizabeth R. Thornton who reports that in her research, I don't know the details of this research, but what she wrote is that in her research, 55% of people reported that their self-worth was often, more often, or always tied to what others think. And that's a pretty high number and a high amount of importance we put on what other people think of us. But I'm also not surprised at all. I'm like, yeah, totally. Totally.
I'm more surprised that it's so close to being 50-50. Mm. That feels actually pretty realistic to me.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, that it's 50-50 like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I guess let's talk about a little bit why that might be, why it might be a little bit higher or even 50-50, or why this realistic, comparison between like external and internal or tied to what others think, why that's happening. So when you're a kid, a little baby person, your entire existence depends on others and rejection by could mean literal death for you. I think especially, in the wild, this happens to animals.
Right.
While this outcome doesn't happen to most people, there's an instinctual and evolutionary reason why others' opinion of us is important. So yeah, if somebody's going to leave you be for days at a time, then you could literally die if you were a small person. So you need them to love you and care for you in order to stay alive.
And it's not even limited to being a young person, but to a certain extent, evolving to be social creatures, there is also that further implication that if we're dependent on others and dependent on the tribe or dependent on other people around us, that does mean that if we're rejected by other people, that we could possibly die. Maybe we have mm-hmm. better chances than we would if we were a baby, but the stakes are still pretty high.
Yeah, so it's unrealistic to think that we could ever just completely remove the importance of external validation. We're social beings, like you said, and we care about the opinion of others because it's important to our interactions with those other people.
Yeah, I think that part is so key. That I think a lot of times when people start talking about internal and external validation in this way, there's almost kind of this assumption that, oh, well, you need to just have internal validation and don't worry about external validation and try to get away from caring what other people think, right? That whole, don't care what other people think. And I think that while that advice is often good, because most of us, I think, care arguably too much about what other people think, and we project a lot onto what they're thinking that they might not actually be thinking about us, but we don't actually want to get rid of this entirely, because it is important that as humans, we do care about what other people think, and we may modify our behavior a little bit because of that, and that's important, right? That's going to help us fit in better in the workplace, help us fit in with our social circle, help us be more understanding and compassionate to people. It's like, this isn't something we want to erase entirely.
However, if completely left unexamined, then it can cause us to end up dependent on that external feedback. Essentially, we could end up being just blown around on the breeze of everybody else's opinions about us or offhanded comments about us, positive or negative, and also regardless of how accurate they actually are. And so to contrast that, having a sense of internal validation that influences your self-worth, it would be maintaining that I have a sense of worthiness as a person, even if I've had a negative interaction or some kind of falling out or some kind of disagreement with someone, or I've made a mistake, or at least it's having the ability to handle that emotional blow without just completely falling apart.
Yeah. What is this unhealthy reliance on external validation look like? So here's an extreme, maybe narcissism or antisocial behavior, things like disregard for other people's feelings or a feeling of like, it's me against everyone else. I've definitely met people who say stuff like that. It's me against the world, but right. In a way that's kind of super negative.
Yeah, that if you don't have enough of an internal validation in this way, it's like, well, what am I going to do? I need to protect myself against how much I'm affected by everyone else. And that one possible outcome of that is this, right? Is just like, well, it's everyone else against me. I'm the good guy and everyone else is the bad guy then. So now that we have a sense of what this version of self-validation or external validation is about, this kind of, am I worthy as a person? We can look at what happens if, like Dedeker said, if you let that get out of hand, if you don't examine that, if you don't look at it, right? We do, it is important to care what other people think. But if we care too much and don't have enough of an internal sense of worth, or have been just given too many signs that we're easily abandonable or not lovable or something like that, it can lead to some maladaptive behaviors as a defense mechanism for that.
Yeah. So on one end of this kind of extreme is that you can develop narcissism or antisocial behavior. Essentially means a disregard for others' feelings or a feeling of me against the world or against everyone else. The way to feel better about myself is to put other people down, just constantly doing that, or protect myself by lowering or dehumanizing others because we're worried about criticism that might be happening. Let's see. Also, these people might appear to have high self-esteem, but it's actually a result of a very low self-esteem and self-worth.
Yeah, I feel like I'll be totally honest. I don't want to necessarily demonize anybody because I've fallen into these traps before myself, right? So I don't necessarily want to make it seem like, oh, it's just all these bad people. But I've also met some real jerks who seem to operate from this place. Maybe seeming to exude a lot of confidence and a lot of high self-esteem, but the reality is that's a very fragile structure that requires, really having to insulate yourself from any criticism, or if you get any criticism or any kind of negative interaction with somebody, really needing to attack that person or put them down in order to preserve your sense of self.
Yeah, the types of people who never take a note or, everything is somebody else's fault or somebody else's problem, rather than being able to say, huh, okay, maybe I need to examine that or whatever. It's interesting because there are definitely some people out there who simply will not take criticism or, choose not to believe it at all. And every problem is somebody else's problem.
And I think kind of what we're getting at here, though, that we don't want to demonize these people, because even though like that behavior is very destructive and often hurtful to the people around, and that the point, though, is that it comes from trying to find some way to defend against how much that external validation does affect them. And unfortunately, instead of being able to find resources for themselves to find a little more resilience and self-validation and self-worth in that way, whether that's because of things from their childhood or, whether it's something they can learn to think a little differently about. Like Dedeker said, you veered into that territory at points in your life. And I think we can all relate to pieces of it sometimes when you're feeling especially fragile. It's like those are the times you lash out and you get defensive or you put down other people to try to make yourself feel better. But it all comes from this very deep fear and vulnerability to those things, that it's like trying to be strong, but doing it in this destructive way, unfortunately. There's an interesting study that I came across that was looking at narcissistic behavior versus the behavior of people with high self-esteem. And I'm not sure exactly how they went about measuring or finding those participants, but one of the big identifiers or big differences that they found, because, you know, some of the behaviors seem similar on the outside, but in actuality, one of the key differences was that a person with a high self-esteem feels, you know, good about themselves and is willing to boost themselves up, but also boost up their romantic partners and other people around them, versus a narcissist who feels like the only way to boost themselves up is to put down other people. And so you might think, oh, that's self-confidence, but whether they're lifting others up with them or not is kind of the marker of whether it's a destructive,
that's a good distinction,
fake self-esteem, yeah, or a real
very
self-esteem.
Important distinction.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so then the other extremes, right? That's the narcissist or the sort of antisocial behavior as a defense mechanism. And on the other side, we have the people pleaser. And I think...
It me.
I think I tend to go more on this side than the antisocial narcissist side.
I definitely do.
But I think I've dabbled in both, to be honest. So this one is, again, that fear of abandonment or not being loved, you know, over-reliance on that external validation. And so it leads to things like being afraid of expressing their true self. They may not even know who they really are, or like what they like, or what their interests or opinions even are, because they're so used to just following the lead of others, trying to fit in, trying to conform, you know, and just, they might not even know. Like, they're not even willingly going against it. They just don't even know. And tend to be more likely to be codependent on romantic partners, again, for understandable reasons, and this lack of ability to say no. And I think that could show up in a workplace of just taking on any assignment that's given to you, even if you don't have the capacity to handle it, and then you end up taking the brunt of it instead of your coworkers. Or it can show up in romantic relationships, of course, as we've talked about many times on this show, of just always, you know, feeling like your no isn't an option because the consequence would be abandonment and, you know, all those things we talked about.
Right. Those are the extreme ends of the spectrum, but of course, in between, in the middle area of the spectrum, we have other behaviors that can still be a sign of too much reliance on external validation. So we have some examples here. These aren't 100% bad. They're quite normal. We've all been here, but it's a good thing to examine. If you have an over-reliance on some of these behaviors, then you might be masking a lack of internal validation. So that can include things being addicted to attention on social media or getting positive feedback on social media, other attention-seeking behaviors. It can include flirting, hooking up, or otherwise trying to get romantic or sexual attention for the sake of feeling good about yourself rather than a genuine interest in those things. And I think that's a little fuzzy because we can seek flirting, we can seek sex, we can seek connection and intimacy for many, many reasons at the same time,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And often it's murky.
That,
it's not always just the one reason, but, you know, with some self-awareness, you can examine yourself and kind of really look at, am I turning to this because I am interested in it? Or am I turning to this because I'm feeling really low right now and need just a real quick boost to how I'm feeling about myself? It could include something like wanting more sex from a partner, not necessarily because you want the sex itself, but because you want to feel loved and appreciated by your partner. You want to feel sexy. And that's not a bad thing to want those things. But sometimes I think it's important to know, are you able to ask for those outside of sex? Are you able to get that outside of sex? This is something that is often very gendered, specifically with straight men are often really socialized to only be able to get like attention, love, affection, being seen as sexy or desirable through sex. And that leads to a lot of, I think, a lot of the tropes that we hear about like sexual dynamics in a lot of straight relationships where men are only seeking these things through sex. So that's something to think about as well. And again, while enjoying these things isn't necessarily bad, the negative side comes from the dependency. So if you notice a decrease in well-being when you aren't getting these sources of external validation, that's something to pay attention to. Or if you're finding that you keep needing more and more and more and more, almost like an addiction where it's not really scratching the itch, that's also something to pay attention to.
So if you listened to us talk about this and felt like, hey, maybe this is me a couple of these, I definitely did. I was like, yep, done that.
Oh, yeah,
check,
me too.
Check.
Yeah. Check.
Yeah, and you feel like, hey, this is maybe something that I want to change about myself. It is possible, because our brains are capable of change if we are able to self-examine and put in the work. So the first step is to just recognize that, you know, you heard this, you recognize those thoughts and feelings, and you see that they're happening and that they are deeply rooted in us because of what happened to us in our young age. Any of our experiences of abandonment or a variety of other experiences may have caused a need for external validation, maybe an intense need.
Which, to clarify, this is not to say this can only happen if you had some very traumatic abandonment as a child. It's like, no. Growing up as a human being with human parents or caregivers,
of course,
you will have some instances of feeling abandoned, especially as a child who doesn't understand the larger context of things. So we've all got this in us, maybe to greater degrees because of certain experiences, but it's there in all of us.
Yeah, and recognize that others' reactions to us actually has much more to do with themselves than it does with us. That's something that I feel like I've really had to learn over the years, that, you know what, like, this is a you problem, not a me problem. And I've been able to say that a lot more recently than I did even, you know, 5 years ago. But somebody, you know, may have an adverse reaction to you, not because of something intrinsic to you, but because you have a similar trait to someone who hurt them in the past. Or they might just be having a bad day, and the reaction to us has more to do with that than to anything that we said. I have to remind myself that at work a lot. Like, if somebody's kind of mean to me, I'm like, you know what? They're probably just having a rough day. I don't take it personally.
One of the most valuable things that my therapist ever said to me was, you know, sometimes you just end up on the receiving end of someone else's trauma.
Yeah.
And I think about that a lot. And I think about that both with like big T trauma and little T trauma, that it's like sometimes you just end up the recipient of maybe an inappropriate reaction, you know, or a reaction that is appropriate, but also overblown and like way bigger or way higher octane than it needs to be. And that doesn't mean not taking any responsibility for your actions or your influence or things like that. But for me, that's been a really, really helpful reminder whenever I feel like someone is reacting to me or criticizing me in a way that I feel is unfair, to help put that in perspective.
Yeah. Something that, speaking of advice that really stood out in our lives, something that my mom told me back when I was in high school, and I forget how we got on this subject, but it was something about feeling like people were unfriendly to me in the hallway, or like no one liked me or something like that. I guess nothing's changed.
I was going to say, what's changed?
I'm like, great. That's like something you'd say now.
Gosh, Jays.
But I am better than I was back then. But what she said to me was basically to be the one to sort of make the first move in terms of just like smiling or saying hi or waving to someone, you know, if it's someone that you know or whatever, because they're probably feeling the same way you are. And it was just kind of that getting me out of this very self-centered view of the world, of everything that everyone is doing is because of what they think about me, versus they're just in their own heads as much as I am. And just kind of, that was a pretty radical shift that I've, over the many years since then, I've tried to remind myself of when interacting with people. It's like, yeah, if I'm having a bad day and feeling hurt by things people do, who knows what kind of day they're having? You know, who knows how I'm affecting their day? You know, it's just, it ripples out much bigger than just our own self-centered experience.
So if you want to hear us talk a little bit more about stuff like this, then go back to our two-part episode on shame, episodes 281 and 282, to hear about how to balance taking feedback in a constructive way with feeling unnecessary shame about yourself in the process. We talk a lot about that on that episode, on those two episodes.
So we're going to go on to talk about validation as it relates to our self-image and also in terms of self-compassion and understanding. But before we get to that, we're going to take a quick break to talk about some ways that you can support this show. Visiting our sponsors or checking out our Patreon really does a lot to help us keep bringing this show to all of y'all out there for free.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on AdamMale.com and EvesToys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I, at AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast, and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I.
And we're back to talk about self-image. So to reiterate from what we said at the beginning of the episode, this is, rather than being just about overall self-worth or your ability to be, you know, loved and cared for and not abandoned, this is more about how we shape our idea of who we are in the world, how we relate to other people. What are our traits? You know, am I chill, as I said before? You know, and this is something that was really interesting for me to learn about. So there was a sociologist named Charles Horton Cooley who coined the term the looking glass self in 1902 in a text called Human Nature and the Social Order.
Oh, yeah. So back when we did call them looking glasses, I suppose.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's not just, he's not being all vintagey. He was just being current.
Oh, so. 1902. Okay, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So the looking glass self essentially is describing that as we're developing the sense of who we are, we're doing that based on the feedback that we get from other people. So that we think about ourselves as being the thing that we think others think about us. Mm-hmm. And in his research, he wasn't even putting it to be cheeky in terms of, oh, well, we just think that we are what we think that other people think that we are. He's actually saying, no, very literally, we are often right about what people think of us, because often we do get fairly direct feedback about that of, you know, oh, wow, you're so tall, or you're so strong, or, you know, ah, yeah, there you are, always late, or like, you're always so clumsy, aren't you? Like in positive mm-hmm. and negative ways, we get that kind of feedback, and that's how we develop our sense of who we are, what our traits are, what our qualities are. And that the impact that other people's opinions of us has is stronger the more, quote, ascendant over us they are, which basically means if they have higher status than us.
Interesting.
Or if we perceive them to have higher status than
us? Yes. If we perceive them to be above us in some way, to have higher status than us, whether that's just because it's a peer we look up to, or because it actually is someone in a status position above us, like a boss or a parent or a teacher or something like that, or an older person, you know, an older kid growing up, that we tend to weight those more strongly.
So the looking glass self comprises three main components. The first being that we imagine how we must appear to others in a social situation. The second being that we imagine and react to what we feel their judgment of that appearance must be. And then third, we develop our sense of self and then respond through these perceived judgments of others. So it's like a weird feedback loop that really doesn't require actually anybody else but yourself to populate, which is maybe the scary part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. So that was a while ago, way back in 1902. But since then, other researchers have continued to study and develop this theory of how we develop a self-identity. Now, I will say we are doing an episode on identity next week.
Yeah.
So we're going to do more about this and how to develop, how one does develop self-identity. But in 1974 and 1975, Kingto Young and John Levi Martin from the Rutgers University Department of Sociology did a study in 1974 and 1975 to try to find empirical evidence to further test this hypothesis. And essentially, they wanted to test if people see themselves based on how others perceive them, to see if that impact is more significant when coming from someone you perceive as higher status than yourself, and importantly, if it can go the other way. So can our own self-image affect the way others see us over time? I think abso-frickin-lutely. But
I think, okay, yeah, this makes sense now because, yeah, in 1902, you could just be like, this is the case, and I'm going to write it down because I'm a man, and I'm going to write it in a book, and it is true. And then, at least by the 70s, we're like, is that actually true? Let's apply some science.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well done.
Pretty much. Yeah, so what they did for this study is they analyzed perceptions of social interactions in 56 naturally occurring communities and intentional communities, which in this case were communes because this happened during the 70s. So there you go.
Oh.
Essentially, by what I'm assuming they mean by naturally occurring communities is just maybe peer groups that formed around some common interest or something like that, right? Something where they've just naturally come together. And then also looked at intentional communities, specifically carved themselves out as a community. The groups consisted primarily of young adults. The median age was 25. So definitely, you know, young adults. And they collected data in 1974 and then again in 75 so that they could compare how things changed over that year.
Over a year, yeah.
And some of the communities disbanded during that year.
I was going to say communes, of course.
Yes. I can imagine, you know, also like your D&D group falls apart or something and you're not all together anymore. It can happen. But they did still have enough data to compare those two. And so the size of the communities ranged from 5 to 40 individuals in each one, with 10 as the average size. And we had 56 of these. So we've got a pretty decent chunk of people. And what they did is they gave each member of a community a three-part questionnaire. Part one asked them to name the members of their group that had specific personal qualities, such as being supportive, decisive, influential, loving, strong, sexy, dominant, et cetera, et cetera. Just identify who do you think of identifies, or you know, who would you identify as having these traits? And then part two, they were asked if they believed they themselves possessed these qualities. So like, which of these do you also possess? And then part three asked them questions about how they related to those people, essentially getting at the, do I view this person as being significant in my life? Are they more powerful than I am in this relationship? Or are we equals? You know, essentially trying to get to the heart of that question of them being ascendant over you.
This feels like it would be a really weird and also fascinating exercise to do, thinking about some of my own communities that I'm a part of. Maybe a little uncomfortable at times.
Yeah.
I know. Or like, workplace, for example, like my work and like your work, Jace, where there's a lot of people.
It'd be interesting.
I would be fascinated to know what people thought.
So basically the important thing to take away from this is that because they did this in fixed size communities, they were able to sort of cross-reference that information. So they had information not only about what people thought the traits were they had, but also how many other people identified them as a person who had that trait. So it allowed them to see both how they saw others and then how much people's individual perceptions matched what other people thought of them.
I see. Okay. So the primary findings of this study were that Self-understanding is indeed, at least to some extent, an internalization of the views that others have of oneself. And they also found that self-conception, or perhaps as you know what we're calling self-image, that also does involve the internalization of the perspective of others. And yes, it is significant if it's from others who we see as being higher status than ourselves.
So there was an interesting bit about gender here. Cooley originally hypothesized that women were more likely to concern themselves with others' perceptions of them. Okay.
It was 1902.
No, this
yeah.
was not
what he saw. Was,
oh,
no,
oh,
Cooley.
Cooley.
Yeah, Cooley
oh,
was
okay.
1902. Yes.
Then fine. Okay, yes. Okay. I will give him a pass this time.
You don't have to give him a pass. Let's just be aware of the context.
Yes. So Young and Martin find that while the looking glass effect was higher in women of their sample, it is because of the relationship between status and gender. And this is a quote, "Hence, it seems that the reason the looking glass effect is stronger among women than among men can be adequately explained simply by virtue of the lower status women have in these groups on average. If women are more concerned about social image than men on average, this may simply be because they are less powerful on average. The gender psychology imputed by Cooley need not be invoked." Fascinating.
Yeah. So they were basically like, let's just not make that one about gender. we've mathematically sort of zeroed that one out here.
Huh. But yeah, I wonder, so in these intentional communities, the idea that the women have less status than men, I mean, yeah, whenever I think about being a man, I'm like, I don't know if I'd want to, but I wouldn't mind the power that being a man gives men.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, I don't know how they're necessarily codifying status in this study, but
it's just based on people's answers to those questions of, do I perceive this person to have more power than me in this relationship?
Interesting.
So it's all just based on people's self-reported relative to each other.
So they're saying that all these men have a lot of status and they're self-reporting.
Are perceived to have more status.
Right.
But, I mean, that's fine. I don't think anyone would argue that in 1902 or 1975 or 2021 that women are perceived to have less power and less status than men are. And often it is true.
Yeah.
Yes, on average.
Right.
For sure.
So this last part is the really cool finding that added to Cooley's work, that this is not something that he had, I guess, been able to look at or really study. And that's the question of, is it possible to not just have our own perception of ourselves influenced by others, but can our own perception influence the way other people think about us? And so this is what's cool about them doing this same thing 2 years in a row, that essentially they were able to look at, is there a trait that someone thinks about themselves that other people did not identify with them, that then by the next year, other people did identify that trait with them. And they found that the effect of someone's belief about themselves on other people's responses the following year was positive for every one of the 24 characteristics that they studied, and especially significant in 16 of those. So essentially saying it's very unlikely that there's not a relation there, right? That it does seem to be a causation. That essentially the idea is, if I think of myself as being, say, reliable or brave, and other people don't identify me as that, but then I believe that about myself and so I continually demonstrate it, that then eventually others will start to have that opinion of me.
Oh,
fascinating.
And they showed empirically that there is evidence that that does happen.
Okay.
So are you saying I need to start thinking of myself as more chill and then acting more chill, and then people will think that I'm chill? Because
no
one's ever thought
chill?
That I was chill, and I've never thought that I was chill. But that's a trait that I would like to invite more into my life and how I move through the world. And so is that the key? Does it all start with me?
The power comes inside of you. It was inside of you all along.
The chill was inside me all along.
No, that's why I've been telling you for the last, year or so that I'm a chill, cool guy, because I recognize that I was not. So I'm like,
but you want
to
be.
I'm trying to really embody that as much as I can.
That's like affirmations or like self-actualization or whatever. Yeah, it's nice.
I do think there is a little connection there of of the trick, though, is in their study, they did show you have to follow it up with the actual actions. You can't just say, right, I'm a nice person and be a jerk all the time. It doesn't work.
No, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. So the third variety of this variety pack of validation.
That's good. I like that.
That's very
there
good.
There you go. Variety, yes, so.
The validation variety pack.
It's beautiful.
Makes me think of just fruit snacks. Like, we're going to put it in your lunch.
Mm. You know what? What I wouldn't
you
give
should get,
for some validation in my lunch every day.
And if kids got that in their lunch every day, maybe they'd feel better about themselves. Because I feel like I really needed validation when I was a child. I need it now, too, let's be honest. Yeah. But, you know.
You don't grow out of that.
I was a kid, for sure.
Maybe we can, at Multiamory, we can market some little, like, fruit snack variety packs that have little
that
messages
say, like,
of validation.
You're the best.
Or prompts. Maybe some prompts. Actually, instead of it being just canned messages, it could be.
Well, that's good, yeah.
You know. Tell your partner your favorite things about them or think about.
Like, oh, that's cute.
You know, something about yourself that you're proud of today, you know.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I love that.
Let's get
that's
in touch
beautiful.
With the snack manufacturers. It'll be like conversation heart style. Like, so you could print on.
Oh,
candy.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's a lot to fit onto. That's a lot to fit onto a tiny little. I was imagining on the packet of fruit snacks.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
I see. On the packet itself. Okay. All right. Well, we'll workshop it. We'll do some focus group, you know, figure out what works.
Okay. So the third variety of validation is less focused on our overall worth or our relative qualities, but about how understandable or normal our thoughts, feelings, and actions are. And again, this is self-acceptance and self-compassion. Karen Hall, PhD, said that validation is the recognition and acceptance of other person's thoughts, feelings, sensations, and behaviors as understandable. There that is again. That kind of threw me off last time, but I understand what you mean now, Jace. It's understandable.
It wasn't me. It was Karen Hall, PhD.
Yes, you're right. Self-validation is the recognition and acceptance of your own thoughts, feelings, sensations, and behaviors as understandable. Like you said before, that people get where you're coming from.
Well, and this is that self-validation is that recognition for yourself.
Okay.
Right? It's like the feelings I'm having are understandable.
Valid.
They're acceptable.
Or understandable.
Valid.
Acceptable. Yeah. For example, if you're feeling hurt by something that someone did, but when you tell a friend about it, they just tell you why you shouldn't feel that way. We talked about this a little bit with toxic positivity, but if they try to like explain it away, it can feel really invalidating. Like our emotions or reactions just don't make sense, or maybe something's wrong with me, stuff like that. So that can be an example of not having self-compassion or self-acceptance because somebody else isn't validating your experience in that moment.
And I think we've all been on the giving and receiving end of that, times where we felt really invalidated by a friend or a family member or a partner, and also times where we have done the same to a friend or a family member or a partner. The way that I tend to see this playing out with clients, because I'm very, very big on helping to coach my couples, especially for like validating each other's feelings when they're opening up, the way that I often see this go awry is, you know, one person opens up about their feelings of vulnerability or fear or what they're worried about, and the other person responds to it with what they think is reassurance of, oh, it'll be okay. Oh, no, you don't have to feel that way because X, Y, and Z.
Toxic positivity.
Or maybe trying to fix it, be like, oh, okay, well, we can do this and that'll fix it. And again, both things may be true. Both sides may be trying to be helpful, but it can end up being really invalidating. So it's a really tricky thing. It's a really tricky balance. And I think we can do that to ourselves as well. We can try to logic ourselves out of our feelings and really invalidate ourselves. And the thing is that, a fear of being alone, it's so deeply rooted in us as human beings. And if we feel like nobody understands our thoughts or our feelings, or, I mean, to give a callback again, we feel like we are crazy for feeling the way that we feel, it can make us experience that really deep primal fear, even when we aren't actually truly alone and there isn't actually a risk that we're going to be abandoned or that we're going to die from neglect or things like that. And in this area, it is possible to generate skills for better self-compassion and understanding. And also, as a bonus, it's essentially the same skills that you can apply to your interactions with others. You can help your partner, your friends, the people close to you get that much needed validation, and that's likely going to increase the trust and intimacy between the two of you, which is going to lead to healthy relationships all around.
Okay, so step one is to be present. And basically what this means is just start by recognizing your own feelings, acknowledging them, or the feelings of someone else, if you're giving this to someone else, is just accepting that they're real. Even if you don't think those perceptions are accurate or that their reaction is justified or true, but that the feelings are real. Same for yourself. It's like, even I'm like, I don't think I should be feeling this way, but start by accepting, but I do. And that's real. And that's something that I can acknowledge and accept, that that feeling is real regardless of why I might feel that way. Because attempting to deny the emotion or just tell someone else that they shouldn't feel that way, or that, oh no, you don't feel that way, you actually feel this other thing, that doesn't do anything to help us get over it. And it's like Dedeker said, it comes from this place of wanting to reassure, but it's not actually, it's not as helpful. And the same with ourselves. If we just try to deny ourselves from feeling these things, we're not helping ourselves get past it, actually. It's counterproductive to what we're trying to do.
So number two is just the facts, ma'am. So ask yourself what exactly happened in the situation that you were in. So not just like your guesses about what other people intended, or yeah, trying to figure out motivation or stuff like that, just the facts of what exactly occurred. And then ask yourself, what are you feeling physically and emotionally? For example, instead of Jake's over being friends with me, whatever, which is why he canceled on our lunch, something like that. Like, essentially putting a reason behind what occurred, saying like, this person doesn't want to be friends with me anymore, so they canceled on our lunch and that's why that happened. But rather say to yourself, I started feeling upset and a little angry today when Jake canceled on our lunch. And I'm also feeling like my stomach is in knots, so maybe there's some fear or shame there too. So you're literally just speaking about yourself and the feelings and the facts of what occurred, and not placing any external, this is what occurred, onto somebody else, you know, because they hate me now and yeah, they don't want to be friends with me.
I had a counselor years ago who this came up a lot for me, this type of thing. And
you still say like, everybody hates me. Does everyone hate us?
I still struggle with this. Yeah. But the thing that she would say to me whenever I would bring up something like that, what, you know, it'd be like, oh, I did a show last weekend. I performed at this bar with my band, and just like, I feel like everyone just really hated me and just like couldn't wait for me to get off stage. And her response was almost always the same, was basically a variation on the same. She's like, how do you know that? Did someone tell you that? Did all the people tell you that? You know, kind of getting to like, what actually happened? How do you know that? And just kind of asking that question of like, what do you actually know? What did you perceive? What were the feelings that you had when that happened? And acknowledging those and realizing they're real, while not invalidating that, but still just being like, okay, well, let's try to understand what really happened. What are the objective facts that we can identify, including how you're feeling about it?
Physically too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And that leads to step three, which is doing your best to name the feelings. And this can be tricky, but you know, there is research that we pulled for a different episode. I didn't have time to pull it for this one right in this moment, that does say that, you know, people who are better at being able to name their feelings generally have a better sense of well-being, better like emotional intelligence, that like this is a skill that we can cultivate, and having feelings is a great time to practice it. So you can ask yourself questions like, what might someone else feel in this situation? Am I feeling anger? Is it fear? Is it sadness? You know, and then you can ask yourself, what kind of action is this feeling compelling me to take? That may give you some clues. So it could be, I want to cry, I want to run away, I want to punch something, I want to crawl under my desk and, you know, bury myself alive so that no one will see how shameful I am. That can also really give a lot of clues about what's actually going on in your feelings.
I struggle so much with identifying my feelings sometimes. I feel like some I got on lock, but sometimes I'm like, I feel something, I don't know, if I'm sad or if I'm scared or if I'm excited. Like, I can't quite tell which it is. This also came up in some of the articles out there talking about this, which is just this idea that many of us have certain emotions that we confuse for each other, or that we're not good at telling the difference between. And so this is sort of an exercise to practice that. Like, I'm not good at telling the difference between fear and excitement, for example, or not good at telling the difference between sadness and anger, perhaps, or, you know, it's like could look a lot of different ways, and learning to become clearer on it, like Dedeker was saying, getting better at naming those things can help you handle them in a better way and have just better overall well-being. And then step four, once we've done this, we've accepted the feelings as they are, we've tried to get to just the facts of what happened and physically how we're feeling, and then trying to name it. The fourth one is compassion and normalizing. And that's basically that everyone has emotions and that we don't always understand them. We don't always want them, but it's perfectly normal to feel that way. And that no one's happy all the time. No one's motivated all the time. No one's energetic all the time. That's just, if we were happy all the time, it wouldn't be happy. It would just be, we wouldn't have a word for it, right? Like, we have a word for happy because there is the contrast to it. There's other things to feel besides that. So don't beat yourself up over it. Like, yeah, it's, you're not always going to feel good, and that's normal. Also, to accept that other people in your situation would probably feel similar to how you feel, and acknowledge that an impact your history might have on these feelings, and that that's also not a bad thing. So again, it's like, okay, I know I'm overreacting to this, or I think maybe I'm overreacting because I have some history that this brought up. I have some baggage, or this hit some trigger of mine. That doesn't mean your feeling's not valid. It's totally understandable. It's, you can accept that you have that feeling while simultaneously acknowledging, okay, this might be influencing that, or maybe some other factor of just, I didn't sleep well enough this week. I can acknowledge that's affecting me, but also accept that my feelings are still real, that they're still valid, and someone else in the same situation would probably feel this way too.
Now, if these feelings sort of caused you to maybe fly off the handle in a moment, or have a moment of weakness, or get a little too intense, none of what we just talked about necessarily means that you have to agree with or justify the actions that you took or want to take, or that you're justifying the actions of somebody else if they did that in turn to you. But we're just talking about simply feeling and validating what happened, and, you know, those feelings, validating that experience and validating what you were feeling in that moment.
Right. So you can offer validation for the feelings without agreeing with them or saying, like, yeah, you're right to feel that. Like, you know, sure. Again, if you're giving this validation to someone
else,
there is
a difference there.
There's a difference between saying, yeah, your feelings are right, you should have punched that person. Instead, it's like, I can totally understand how, you know, what from what you've
upset
told
you
me,
were in the moment.
Given your history, like, I could totally understand feeling that way. Also, you shouldn't have done that. And also, maybe I'm even going to hold you accountable for that, especially if, you know, if it's something you did to me or maybe to someone else when I was there. It's like, I could still hold you accountable while still validating that you had those feelings, and not saying, like, you're broken for having those feelings, because that's not going to help the person change that behavior. And it's not going to help yourself if you're the one who messed up too.
Yeah, it is challenging kind of parsing out, like, the feelings versus the action taken, because one can be valid and okay while the other is not necessarily. So yeah, just kind of distinguishing between those two. And I think that makes a person a really big person if they're able to say, like, hey, I understand where you were, this place that you were in the moment, versus saying, like, yeah, I understand why you hit that person or freaked out in that moment.
And pro tip, if you're trying to validate a partner's feelings, get information from them about what they're feeling. It doesn't work.
Yeah. Don't try to tell them.
Oh yeah, I can totally understand why you would, like, totally freak out and get so pissed off and, like, fly off the handle. If that's, yeah, it's totally normal to feel that. No. You can ask these questions too. You can be curious about the thoughts that came up for them, what they're feeling physically and emotionally. You can bring that compassionate curiosity and then validate the feelings that they say they were feeling.
Yeah. Actually, in the article, there are a few different articles that these steps were based off of, but in some of those, some of the advice was actually to, if you're trying to validate someone else, to guess what they might be feeling and try to validate that. And I was like, no, we've read a lot of other studies saying that that's not a helpful thing to do and that we're really bad at it as humans. So I was like, no, bad. But I did validate their feelings. I can understand why you might think that that's the right thing to do.
Well done.
Anyway, this has been a fun ride through the world of the validation variety pack.
A fun journey through the looking glass, eating a variety pack of snacks along the way.
Yum. Yeah. Now I'm hungry.
Well, hopefully feeling all right about ourselves. So just as a quick recap, all of these are referred to as validation, right? As external validation or internal validation. And some people will tend to demonize external validation in some of these situations. And really, in all of them, we need a balance. And it's just about that. So the point of this episode is to give you some tools, some things to think about, to examine that for yourself and maybe evaluate. Yeah, okay, I think I am maybe leaning a little too heavily on external validation in this way, whether it's about what type of person you think you are or how good of a person you think you are or whether your feelings are understandable or reasonable. So thank you all for joining us. In our bonus episode, we're going to be looking specifically at a researcher who looks at social media and external validation, which of course we've talked about a little bit, but we're going to talk about that a little bit more, see what sorts of things that she found. So we would love to hear from you. On our Instagram, we're posting our question, when do you feel validated? The best place to share your thoughts with other listeners is also on this episode's discussion thread in our private Facebook group or Discord chat. You can get access to these groups and join our exclusive community by going to patreon.com/multiamory. In addition, you can share with us publicly on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Multiamory is created and produced by Emily Matlack, Dedeker Winston, and me, Jace Lindgren. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio Balvanera. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our production assistants are Rachel Schenowork and Carson Collins. Research for this episode was done by Dr. Kiana Nurse. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.